Good morning.
Members, call this meeting to order. We do have a quorum now. Representative Claiborne, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
I have. And I make a motion to adopt the minutes.
Representative Claiborne has made a motion to adopt the minutes for February 21st. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes have been adopted. Thank you. Representative Lilly, welcome to our committee. We're going to do Representative Cagles at the same time, but seeing as how you're here, why don't we do 1295 first, and hopefully we get some more people here. Representative Lilly, I'll proceed with your testimony. I move that 1295 be referred to Ways and Means. With the recommendation to be referred to the taxes.
Taxes, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Good morning. This is kind of a journey back. I was on this committee last year, and so it's maybe I should have brought donuts, I guess, so my apologies. But it's nice to see some friendly faces and some not-so-friendly faces.
And Representative Lilly, we heard there was a breakfast over across the street. You could have brought bacon from that. I hear the bacon smelled really good.
That does sound delicious. This morning I found a cookie from last night's event that the middle of the alphabet was at the governor's mansion. So I found the governor's wife had made cookies for us, and I found one this morning in my pocket. So I could have brought that. I'm sorry. House File 1295 is essentially to set up a new account of with general in the general revenue fund that for money that's raised right at the sports center, that money that's raised there can be used rolled back into efforts that are done at the sports center, and it's pretty simple. They're up there. A lot of activities are done. I don't know if you've been up there with kids or grandkids or neighbors to see some of the events, but as many of these places are, they're doing a great job with the little bit of money that they get. And honestly, the state really doesn't help them that much. I think last year and the last couple of years, I think they get $300,000-$400,000 a year. And they do, through multiple efforts of fundraising and other things, they do millions of dollars of work. But with me today, I have Todd Johnson, who's the director. I guess I don't know your exact title, but he runs the whole sports center up there and facilities around the state, all over Minnesota, doing great work for the youth of our state. But I'll let him tell you more about the bill, and thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape and then proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Todd Johnson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. In that position, I also serve as Executive Director for the National Sports Center Foundation, which is a nonprofit entity that actually manages the National Sports Center up in Blaine. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present this bill to you, and I know it needs to be referred to the Tax Committee, this particular piece. And since my days here, I guess it goes to Ways and Means and then to the Tax Committee, so find the proper format there. Well, House File 1295 really sets up an account of the tax collections received or paid when someone either enters a adult hockey league program or pays for certain activities up at the sports center. It's not a huge amount of money, but it's enough that we think would make quite a difference. So just to step back a little bit for most of you, the National Sports Center was established itself with legislation back in 1987. At the time, it was going to be an Olympic training facility, which those of you who are familiar with the history probably know this, but Minnesota actually only lost out to Atlanta at that time by 4 votes, and so there was a possibility that was actually going to happen. Since that time, there have been multiple iterations to repurpose it, and it's been nothing but a major and unmitigated success, and that flattery is copying someone is a sure sort of flattery. Disney World spent 3 years studying the National Sports Center before they built ESPN Wide World of Sports, and of course they have a little bit more revenue to do it. Really what the account does is allows us to get at the deferred maintenance that the facility faces. It's not for staff, it's not for anything other than that. We do not have a fund of money, and we're sort of at the mercy of the bonding cycle in order to get at deferred maintenance. Most of you are probably familiar with the Department of Administration's requirement that all state facilities enter their data and what their facility is worth. So the replacement value of the National Sports Center, the 600-acre campus, according to the state of Minnesota, about a $24 million investment over time, the replacement value now is $170 million to replace that facility. This publication catalogs all of the deferred maintenance and life safety issues in state facilities. Our number now has climbed to $40 million. So our hope is to set up this account to capture the money, the taxes that are paid by participants, put it in account if need be, and we could talk about that here, or in tax committee, we're more than willing to dedicate it and say that the money's not going for anything else other than to pay for deferred maintenance and the upkeep of this state investment.
So, members, any questions? Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And can we have an idea of what the history of those receipts have been?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's approximately $300,000 a year.
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I guess you're looking at this for a long term, like roof, and other things. What are the approximate annual expenditures if you took those and put them across the 10-year period?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a great question. We have an aging physical plant. The ice rinks are coming up on 20 years old. At any one time, we fund a lot of this stuff now through fundraising. I would say, I guess I'm just trying to think of an example. Last year, a chiller went out, and that chiller, we ended up raising the money to pay for it. It was about a $225,000 expense, just one chiller. We're looking at things like switching out to LED lighting in the ice arenas, those sorts of things. We would have a maintenance schedule. We could spend $300,000 a year just attacking assets like the stadium, the ice rink, various fields, keeping them up. As you know, we're the world's largest soccer facility. We're in the Guinness Book of Records for that. One of the reasons we're able to attract so many good teams is that the condition of them has been improved, which is important to folks. So there's a long list, and I'd be happy to supply that to you, Representative.
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I assume hockey and indoor hockey has been around for a little while, so you might have a history of what those type of expenses would be, and I was hoping that planning had been in effect prompting this. Hopefully the author can maybe have, some of those examples, for future committees and for the floor. Thank you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many other agencies do this kind of thing where the money, because actually, I could be reading this wrong, but it looks like you're going to be almost a taxing authority now because you're keeping the taxes that you're collecting. Is that right on this bill?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Speaker, Representative, I actually don't think we are collecting a tax now, so I don't think we're necessarily a taxing authority. It's going to an account that then we would apply back to the Revenue Department to receive.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, do you know of how many other entities do this type of thing?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I, off the top of my head, I can't think of another one. We're just literally trying to be creative here and trying to figure out a way to get some much-needed capital repair and asset preservation for the Amateur Sports Commission, National Sports Center in general.
Representative Green.
Well, you know, I will leave some time for other questions, too, but it seems to me that, you know, you're taking money now that is being placed somewhere else, so now we're going to replace that somewhere else. You're taking away the ability for the legislature to oversee what's going on there. Where's the oversight going to come from? I have some problems with this. I know that it's a cumbersome way to get money to come back here, but that's the process that we have. And if we're just going to say, well, whoever taxes can just keep what they tax, and then that's how they can fund themselves, we've gotten in some trouble in that when we look at some of our agencies and some of our even our state offices that fund themselves with their own fees and fines and whatever. So I think this is kind of dangerous. A dangerous thing to go down on. So do you have any idea how the state's going to replace, you know, what you're taking out of here without oversight?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, I think it's a fair question. It's a good question. I don't have a replacement $300,000 a year for the state. No, I don't.
Okay. Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Green, it's and maybe I could have Mr. Johnson talk about it, but this organization's really been, we as a state, I don't know how much, and maybe you can tell me exactly how much their budget is, but the state's contribution for all the activities for our National Sports Center, it's not just, you know, it's in Blaine, but it's not Blaine. It's, you know, there's kids coming from all over the state and the world, but I think we only contribute to maybe our staff can say, but I think it's only like $300,000 or $400,000 for a $30 million deal, I think, or more. So, I mean, it's a small piece, but yes, you're right. The money would come from somewhere. I mean, you're 100% right. I mean, it's when you take it from one spot, one pot, obviously that money was going towards something else, or so. You're totally right.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, were you done, Representative Lewis?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I didn't want to cut you off, really. I understand that, and I know that there's a lot of good projects, and I know that the Amateur Sports does great things, but we're still taking, once again, taking the authority away from elected people to decide where the money goes, and it is a dangerous slope to be on. You know, I see it all the time in the agencies, and I know that a lot of people from the metro don't see it as much as we do in greater Minnesota, but we've got people in charge of us now out there who can fee us and fine us and put regulations on us that never come through this body. And so every time I see another step outside of that realm, it scares me that we're kind of losing a little bit of freedom. We're losing some transparency for the people that we're supposed to be representing. So, you know, it's a little worrisome when this happens. And I know, like I said, I know it's cumbersome to keep coming back to the state for money, but that's our process. I mean, we're not dealing with our own money. It's not Representative Steve Green's money who can say to the amateur sports folks here, gee, here's $300,000 of my own money. I have to be accountable of this to the people that elected me. So that's one of my big concerns.
Yep. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a fiscal note on this?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel, no, because the impact is going to be provided by a revenue estimate, and that will be requested by the tax committee.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree that would be a revenue issue, but I think there's also an expense issue possibly here because somebody's going to have to do some different programming or whatever in the departments, and therefore you'd have an expenditure, wouldn't you?
Ms. Roberts, I believe those are included in the revenue notes that come to the revenue mm-hmm. department. Ms. Roberts?
Mr. Chair and members, revenue estimates only include the revenue impact. If we want to look to see if there's a expenditure impact, I can request a fiscal note and have that travel to the tax committee so they can consider that too.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess, you know, it's hard to be a participative member of a finance committee if indeed we don't have a fiscal note that represents the cost. So, you know, I share a number of the concerns that were just brought up with replacing the revenue, but I do think it might be a little premature to be passing this out of this committee if we're kind of putting a rubber stamp on something that we don't know what it's going to cost relative to the agencies that we have the purview over.
Thank you, Mr. I understand.
That is a question.
Yeah, I understand the reverse of Vogel. I don't know if I'm able to answer that. Like I said, before it goes anywhere, it's got to go to taxes because of the tax implications of it. And I don't know if you're talking costs of programming, if what you're talking about, I think similar to that would be constitutional amendments that the Secretary of State, they put a $2,000 cost on it. Which means it could have to go the ways and means. If that's the, I would think it would probably be somewhere in that price range, so it may be minimal cost, but you know, that's something that we can get from a fiscal note and ask for it, and it'll follow this to taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Aiken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly and Mr. Todd, you had talked a little bit about deferred maintenance and improvements, and do you estimate that this change in money coming from the general fund would be able to prevent you coming back to need additional funds for maintenance and improvements on the facility?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, as I stated, there's about $40 million in deferred maintenance on the facility itself, so the goal was really to establish a fund so we could start chipping away at some of those projects and have a steady source to be able to do that. Right now, we literally rely on sponsors and the nonprofit side of our business in order to accomplish that. We do find ourselves in front of the Capital Investment Committee, but normally that is for new initiatives and new projects. So. I suppose that could be redirected towards those sorts of initiatives as well.
Representative Acomb.
That helps.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My question, in Plymouth we have a great eye center, and I can totally appreciate the fundraising that we are having always to do for deferred maintenance. And deferred maintenance is something that we're hearing about in all of our state buildings and in our university systems as well. I asked this question in higher ed, and I'll ask it of you as well. When we're talking about these regional assets, whether there are university buildings or the ICE Center in Plain, do you have any idea how many jobs will be created by this maintenance work that needs to be done in your area? And also, if I may ask another question at the same time, do you know how many hotel rooms and how many restaurant tables are filled by the regional asset that is the sports center?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. You know, with regards to the number of jobs, it's really dependent on the projects, and I'd be happy to sort of give you some of the estimates. In a bill later, we're going to be talking about the replacement of the refrigerant that needs to be replaced, called R22, which you're probably aware of that. And the estimates on those can go anywhere from $400,000 to $1 million in the cost of those replacements that have to happen throughout the state. So the number of people employed, it really depends. And we could get into the weeds real quick of whether they're direct or indirect ice systems, and if they have to chop up the floor and put in new plumbing and all of that. So the price could differ, but I'd be happy to give you an estimate later. With regard to the second part of your question, the National Sports Center is absolutely an incredible asset in terms of sports tourism. It's our charge in statute to create economic impact through sports tourism, and we do that like no other. Recently, Minnesota Tourism just came out with the most visited sites in the state, and after the Mall of America, we are number two in terms of facility. There are two parks that have more people than we do, but we have anywhere from 4 million to 4.2 million visitors a year. 2.1, 2.2 million of those visitors go to the eight sheets of ice. The number of hotel rooms that we impact is it's pretty incredible. So the economic impact alone from the National Sports Center is about $54 million a year.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Representative Lilly.
Good morning, sir.
How are you? I'm just wondering, you're asking for the opportunity for a special taxing authority, and I'm just wondering why you wouldn't consider just a general fund appropriation. We take care of a number of issues along this line with an appropriation of this nature. It certainly would alleviate your having to travel to the denizens of the tax committee. Just your thoughts on that, and I have a follow-up.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Albright, good morning. So I think the path on this is, again, I just kind of mentioned that they have up there, the reason I've gotten involved, it's there's the speaker, so Speaker Dowagen and now Melissa Hortman appoint some of us. So I'm one of the members that got appointed on the Amateur Sports Commission. Representative Runbeck was, you know, served with me last session, and I don't know all the members in the Senate, Representative Newton. So anyways, we got involved, but the reason they've just really not done that well here. You know, we funded them for about $300,000, and I don't think they did very well in bonding either. Honestly, it just for the need, because the need is real, and we just have fallen short. So you just try to figure out a way it's a workaround, but the money is going right back in to the facility that's raised at the facility, and you know so that's kind of what this is attempting to do. So that's why it's not ideal. I mean, yes, I wish we'd fund them fully the way it would. I wish that a bunch of us in this committee serve on capital investment. You know, I wish we could do the multi-billion dollar bill and fill out all the needs that our great state needs. But it's just, sometimes that gets into fighting, and we don't really succeed. And this has been an area where they've had to, honestly, I think they get $300,000-$400,000 from us as a state, and they're really able through fundraising and other things. They've got the sponsorships. I think they're just renaming the whole, it's not Schwann's, going to be into the future. They got a new sponsorship or relationship. They've got a 25 or how long? A year commitment with the new soccer team up there to practice. You know, so, I mean, they're doing all these other things. So it's the intent is pure. So I don't know how to say it other than...
Mr. Chair, just to follow up.
Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just to follow up for you, and this maybe tags on to what Representative Vogel was talking about. If this bill were to go to, as it appears, going to Tax Committee, as Ms. Roberts also said, that the fiscal note will be assessed and identified in terms of the cost there, would it then travel back to government finance so we could take a look at that after the fiscal note is known before we pass it on? I think it deserves a consideration by this committee after that is known, before moving to Ways and Means again.
Ms. Roberts, would that, getting a fiscal note out of taxes, would that?
I'm not sure. Could you restate the question?
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. The request for a fiscal note probably will land in the time when Mr. Representative Lilly and this bill will arrive in Tax Committee. The assessment of what fiscal cost to an agency that would administer it would be known at that point. My sense is that it would make sense for it to travel back to state government finance for this committee to hear of it and understand its implications to the agencies or otherwise fiscal budgets before we move it on to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, I think that would be a decision for the chairs of the tax committee and this committee to consult on. We're not sure if there is a fiscal impact and it if it would be a programming cost at Department of Revenue, that may be something that the tax committee would consider with all of the other things that they're doing that impact the Department of Revenue. So I think we would have to see if there was a cost first and then determine what the process would be.
And Mr. Gearing, you're whispering something over here.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I was just going to confirm what Ms. Roberts said, which is that this is a decision for the chair to make about whether to bring the bill back or not.
And we can look at that going forward. We'll see what the tax committee does with it. But my understanding is in the past, costs like this that are dealing with taxes and tax revenue, the tax department or the tax committee absorbs those costs that wouldn't be coming out of our budget. It would be coming out of the tax department's budget, the tax committee's budget.
And that, Mr. Chair, thank you for that comment. And I think it's important that regardless of what happens in tax, the accounts and the jurisdiction of this committee needs to be respected, not that it's a turf war, but it is a coordination. And if we were to do our job ably and well for the people we serve, I think at least it serves us to have the conversation with the chair of that committee and see if it comes back here, if there's any impact on our responsibilities. So thank you.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And if we can move things along, we're running a little behind time here. This is taking longer than I thought it would.
Yeah, a freshman question that kind of follows up on Representative Albright's line of questioning. So we've got a number of state and regional facilities. I think of the zoo, the History Center, the Science Museum. I'm guessing that they get some kind of an appropriation every biennium. How do we provide subsidies to these other similar sorts of organizations usually?
It's being whispered on my ear that it's direct appropriation. And then for capital costs, they go through the bonding committee at times to get repairs and maintenance done, similar to what our colleges and our MinSU and our U of M do. This might be setting a precedent. That's
the essence of my question. Thank you.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Mr. Johnson. I will admit that I've never been up there. My kids were already beyond the age when it kind of got started. I think my grandkids are headed that direction. But what I haven't heard from you is, and you answered part of the question just recently, you said you have over 4 million visitors each year, and I am aware that they come from all over the world. You haven't given too much of a overview, if you would, about the budget that you operate under. And if I work the math backwards, if the sales tax captured at your facility generates $300,000, that would tell me that there's at least about $4 million or more of taxable sales that are occurring. And I guess dividing that into, and I realize not everything is taxable perhaps, but 4.2 million visitors, it would seem to me that it would be rather easy to make some adjustments in the fees you charge to have ongoing and regular revenue. You know, part of why you're here is that this would secure regular revenue rather than coming back all the time. But I'm all for user fees, and it is world renowned, and I think that you've created the momentum that's there, and I hear from other people that it's a wonderful facility and well maintained. But this is always a problem with state facilities and other public buildings or public venues of this deferred maintenance. Easy to sell the project, but selling the amount of money that's needed to keep it up is quite another issue. A good example might even be right behind us across the street. It takes a lot of money to build new buildings and then staff it and keep things up. So my question to you would be, given the volume of people that are coming through here, that would seem like a rather modest fee if there are entry fees or user fees to make adjustments and generate the money you're requiring just by doing that. What are your comments to that?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think it's a very good point. It's a point you hit where how much you can actually charge, and you sort of hit a point where you're just pricing some folks out of the market. I think I presented a little bit in the overview hearing our budget, but we do get Representative Lilly is right. We receive right around $325,000 a year from the state for, as an appropriation. The facility itself, the National Sports Center, is about a $16 million entity. But most of that money comes from user fees and from some of the operations that we run. You hit a point that I've always been concerned about, where we're not a facility like one of the major sports venues where you can want to or should be charging $5 for a bottle of water. So we reach a point, and we're probably there, but I certainly take your comments and suggestions to heart as whether or not there's a way through user fees that we could increase it a little bit more. 85% of our visitors are from Minnesota, just so you know that. I'm being told
to hurry up. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, just kind of finishing that point, I've got grandchildren that are in dance, and they are traveling all over the country. And so the cost of airfare and transit and lodging, that all costs money to come there, and I don't think a couple bucks more to recognize that this is a world-class facility to participate there. You know, it's one of those things we're all resistant on increasing fees or prices, but it's a reality. And I guess I would encourage you to you know, really look in that direction, because $300,000 against $16 million of revenue was a rather modest, really modest increase in costs. And we see it happening every time we go into a restaurant. I mean, we were all used to being able to buy a burger and fries plated at a restaurant for under $10, and now you're lucky if you can find it for $15. That's just the reality of the way things are. So just a suggestion, but I think you wouldn't have to keep coming back to the legislature for more money.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Elkins and the newer members. The other entities, such as the zoo has really decreased the amount of support the state has or supplemented the state support by providing, they've got sponsorship, concessions, merchandise, memberships, et cetera, that I believe runs the vast majority of their enterprises. And I think that's sort of what we touched on. But the main trying to understand is, you know, the examples of maintenance were regular maintenance. Being on a school board, you've got regular and you have long term, and you didn't really, you used long term and you didn't have examples of that. So it'd be nice to actually have that if you're going to use it. And I would ask staff, but I'm sure that they couldn't answer, what is the numeric equivalent of pretty incredible, because that was a reference to the number of hotel rooms. So it's nice to have numbers in a form of measurement that, you know, I can understand. But the Minnesota tradition, you know, of fundraising is long and strong, and I was wondering what, over the last 3 years, what has that been bringing in?
Mr. Johnson.
Representative, we annually raise somewhere between $1 million and $1.6 million a year.
Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, you know, I think it's pretty evident that these dollars are a pittance compared to the fundraising, the other entities, and it'd be easier to support if we had a, you know, actual defined, you know, what it was going to and et cetera. But I, you know, let the author know that I don't find this as an unreasonable approach. I think there are some tweaks to reporting and other things like that that would be nice to see in the bill. Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak on this bill? It looks like there. I thought somebody looked like here. Representative Lilly, you want to do a quick wrap up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion. these folks are really trying to do a lot of great work for our state on really not too much money from the state. They do a good job of fundraising. Just to be clear, the numbers that were mentioned earlier don't include me if I went to a game. They don't include, like, you know, I think they would if you come from Rochester, but I don't think if they're, you know, from the metro, I don't think they're including those visits even in the process. But again, thank you all for hearing, and I'm whatever path you choose is fine to me, but I think it's a good effort that these folks are trying to do out there and for the state of Minnesota.
So, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 1295, actually I'll modify it, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee, and they'll send it where it needs to be sent. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The ayes have it.
Mr. Chair, members.
And the next bill we have on our committee, and actually, I'm going to do this, don't we? We'll do them together, a House File 541 and House File 956 are similar bills, both dealing with the Mighty Ducks Committee. Representative Cagle, welcome to the committee. And we've got to do the motion separately, don't we?
Yes, the motions are different.
So I'll start off, we just put him to get him on the here. House File 541, I'll move that be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And proceed with your testimony. And if you want to go first, Representative Daigle, on yours.
You had enough of me.
I think we had enough of him. I heard that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So House File 956 is the James Metzen Mighty Ducks Grant Program. And so this, from between 2014 and 2016, the James Metzen Mighty Ducks Grant Program granted $5.8 million for improvements in ice arenas around the state. Most of the grants were made to eliminate the use of R22 refrigerant and improve indoor quality in arenas. And so what we're asking for is $4 million over the biennium to help make those improvements and fund the grant program again.
And Representative Lilly, if you want to speak about your bill.
Mr. Chair and members, and mine's very similar on this R22 problem that many facilities around the state are facing, and mine's, I believe, a bonding approach of a $5 million appropriation. And hoping that this could help a lot of facilities around the state that are going through this. I don't know if any communities around the table are going through this, but it's a real cost that the communities bear. Mm-hmm. And what this will do is help buy it down. The communities are definitely going to have to step up and match, because you can't get her done for the, you know, if you divide it out, probably only. Anyways.
And I believe there's people here from that have come to testify on this. I believe there's somebody from Benson. Is there a Tina here? He's going to speak. Why don't you let them speak first, because they're from out of town, and make sure that they get the timing, and then we'll get the other people to speak. If you want to introduce yourself for the tape, sir, and
my name's Alan Kozeski. I'm from the Morris Benson area.
What was the last name?
Alan Kozeski.
Kozeski?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Proceed with your testimony.
Well, we're here on behalf of the NBA Storm. We're a small community. We, you know, most of our associations are all on fundraising. Our whole operation, our whole, hockey associations are all volunteer. We do very little money from outside sources. But like our building in the Storm in the Morris Benson area, the air exchange, we were looking forward to putting a dehumidification system in, because without it, their roof has gone bad. And in order to replace roof, we got to add a dehumidification system into it. And the county owns the building, but they won't. We manage the building. But that's, I don't know, this is new to me, so.
You're doing fine.
Okay. But that's, we're here to ask for assistance in that, because, like I said, keep the numbers there. We can't raise our fees very much. Otherwise, we'd lose a lot of our numbers. We're association runs on basically a dozen towns or so. Like my son, we drive 25 to 50 miles each for practices and for hockey games, because we have two rinks, one in Benson, one in Morris. And so that's, I don't know what else to say on that.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Yeah. And welcome, thank you for coming down here. It was a nice, easy summertime drive down here.
Yeah. Yeah, we came down last night. But that's, thank you for your listening.
And thank you for your testimony. Yeah. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Brett Heitkamp. I'm the city administrator for the city of Champlin. We are here along with my facility manager, Mr. Charles Lane. We are here to testify in support of the two house files that you have in front of you. Our Champlin facility was constructed in 1996. It has a direct refrigeration system. As you're aware, the EPA will cease production of the R22 product in the year 2020. We have, I think, as part of the intent of Senator Mensah's original bill, we are an equal opportunity. When we constructed in 1996, we were not an original recipient of the Mighty Ducks funding. However, we did construct fully female locker rooms and facilities in anticipation. We did not have a high school girls program. We did not have a youth association girls program at that time. However, we did do our job and try and have the foresight to foresee what the intent was and where the league was headed in terms of general equity. The program itself, as you mentioned, it's in our case, it's about $1.8 million. We have done I think our job in terms of allocating a portion of our annual revenues in terms of setting aside funding for the capital replacement. However, the support of the Mighty Ducks bill and the $500,000 per facility as it's outlined would address a large portion or a significant portion of what is needed there. We feel similar to what was testified earlier, that we understand the responsibility of the community. We have a strong youth association in the community. They make a $50,000 contribution to our program as well. So I think it again meets the intent of being community-based, and everybody's paying part of the pain in terms of the revenues. Our ICE rates are about $220 per hour, which are on the very high end of the scale. So we feel we're trying to generate the revenue necessary. However, there is a reason that the private sector doesn't get involved in the ice arena businesses. You can't make money at it. And so we are proud of the fact that we generally operate in that $50,000 to $75,000 net loss. We feel ourselves, the community, and all our partners are doing what we can, and we would genuinely request the support of the two house files that you have before you today.
Thank you. And sir, did you need to testify, or are you just here for answer questions?
Mr. Chair, yes, thank you. I do not.
He's my technical support.
He's technical. Phone a friend, we call that. Members, questions? Green, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said you have on your budget that you're putting aside some money, but apparently it's not enough. I have another couple of questions. I'm glad for that, because most people don't do that, and then they come for bonding. So that's good to hear. I wish it would be more, because it seems like we never look ahead, and we always think that we can come to the government and get our upgrades so that they're never budgeted in. So, but the improvements that you're looking at now in both of these bills, how long will they last? I mean, because maintenance is ongoing, so you're looking at about $9 million here between the two, and how many years into the future is that going to take you before you need to come back for more?
Mr. Heitkamp, please identify yourself for the table.
Mr. Chair, my name is Charles Lane. I'm a Parks Facilities Manager for the City of Champlin. Representative, if I may answer your question, what the City of Champlin would propose would be an indirect ammonia system, and those will last anywhere from 20 to 30 years. Ammonia is a tried and true refrigerant, and most systems nowadays are built on indirect ammonia systems. So, again, the longevity would be roughly 20 to 30 years on a system like that.
Representative Green.
That's pretty good. I'm glad to hear that, too, because another problem that we have is that we'll bond for something, and it'll be worn out before we're done paying off the bonds. And as most people know, and some people don't, when you're bonding, you're actually getting what you want today and letting your kids and grandkids pay for it later, and it's been a real problem. Most people are also not aware that right now our bonding debt, that our debt service, is more than we bond for. So we have a little problem with bonding, so I hope that when we run these bonding bills through there for projects, they're going to last well into the future, because we're going to break the system here pretty quick. But you guys had a
Representative Green.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. You guys had an appropriation in 2016, and it looks like you didn't spend it all. Can you tell me what that was about?
Mr. Johnson, I guess this looks like he's coming to the mic.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's for us.
And say your name for the tape.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, my name is Todd Johnson, again from the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. The appropriation that was made in 2016 was the total appropriation for the Mets and Mighty Ducks program was a $10 million grant. At the time, So, first of all, this money does not go directly to the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. We're a pass-through. We are an administrator of the grant. We don't take a fee to administer the grant. We just make sure that there are matching funds available, and we try to get the money out the door as soon as possible. A couple things happened, actually, with that. It was some of the municipal governments were not able to get the matching funds in place in the amount of time before the next budget cycle came up, and the money was taken back to the state. And secondly, as was testified earlier, the total amount of the match for the indirect system was not at a level that it made sense for some of these entities to apply. The match then wasn't enough for them to make it worth their while to apply for the money. That's why part of the bill increases those numbers in what can be granted and what could be matched.
And Mr. Johnson, these are not just for the Champlin Arena or one arena. These are statewide for arenas across the state. This is what the Mighty Ducks program.
Exactly.
Representative Green.
Thank you.
Representative Claiborne.
Mr. Chair, to your point that these are for state facilities, I was curious as to how many state facilities there are, since the grant is up to $500,000. So how many rinks can we service?
Well, Representative Claiborne, these are not state facilities.
No,
they're
around
local.
The state.
Yeah, they're local facilities. Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I'm sure these guys will have their letter in right away. It'll be first come, first serve, and we'll try to be judicious in how we get the money out the door. The need is great. As the city administrator testified earlier, this refrigerant R22 was banned from sale back in 1976, effective 2020. So we're coming up on 2020. Ice rinks can still use the product, but they can't purchase it on the market. So there will be entities who will stockpile it and use it. Other folks and many municipal rinks are being forward-thinking and trying to figure out alternatives. And ammonia is one of the best alternatives, and that's what they're trying to do. To answer your question more directly, we will judiciously sort out the best way to get the money out the door. Just depending on how many apply, I think we could, with a $2 million grant, depending upon what folks apply to. That could be as many as 10 ice arenas, as few as five. We know the need's greater than that.
Thank you.
Representative Claiborne. Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, and to any of the testifiers, you concerned me there for a moment. These rinks are really expensive to construct. Do we have any rinks that you know of around the state that can no longer operate because of this?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can't think of an ice rink that has a – there are leaks on occasion that are contained. We have an ice tech here – specialist that's probably a little better than I, but I don't know that there's any that aren't operating right now. I know they're all concerned about the potential for leaks and what they're going to do going forward, and also just concerned about what the price of R22 could be on the open market once you can no longer legally purchase it unless you've stockpiled it. Is that fair to say?
I hear. I see a head shaking there, so I think.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Representative Hewitt.
And you now have brought up a question of leaks. When you do have a pretty active leak, does that shut down the arena?
Mr. Lamb, I guess you'd be the most technical
Mr. Chair, Representative, answer. Yes, it would. Long story short, because of that particular leak, depending on how large the leak is, you might necessarily have to, in that case, whether it's a sand floor or concrete floor, break the floor apart and repair the leak where it's identified in order to get back on track and have your system be refrigerated again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 541 be referred to Ways and Means Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to Capital Investment Division. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. The ayes have it.
Mr. Chair.
And one second. And House File 956. We're going to be holding that over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to tell you thank you for hearing these bills, but also thank you for the testifiers that have come from distances and the community. Representative Stevenson's been all over me virtually every day. So if you have one of these things going on in your community, believe me, you're paying attention to it as a politician because they're expensive and they're trying to figure it out in your community. Even wealthier communities have struggled with this, trying to figure it out and to make it work. And so it's we were lucky in my community to get a little bit of the Mighty Ducks before it went away. And it's an arena that it's kind of an old school arena that was made by local people. I'm sure it's totally illegal today. They built it on weekend, you know, construction volunteers and who knows what, you know, I think a little bit of beverage maybe, but in a little polar arena. But I'm sure it couldn't thrive without this help. So thank you for hearing these.
You're welcome. Thank you. And Representative
Cagle. Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to – I remember skating at the Champlin Arena and when it was brand new, and I didn't even know that we were in special locker rooms. So thanks.
Thank you, and thanks for coming. And the people from Benson, thank you for coming down and testifying. You did a good job. So, members, now we have House File 633, and I think I saw Representative Tapke come in. I see his bag back there. He might have just stepped out. Well, he's coming. He's coming. Jimmy's coming, he said. Yeah.
This is a good time to think too. There's lots of fall protection and all the snow in the
And even though I haven't been, I don't know, he looks like he has a bag up there. I Representative Tapke, even though we haven't been requiring people to bring treats, but we won't turn them down, I think.
All right, give me just a second. I got to open them up for everybody. These have had a long road today.
And go there.
Okay.
Yeah. And members, House File, I'll make the motion, House File 633. Is before the division. I move that we hold it over for possible. I don't need to make a motion, but this is going to be held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And Representative Tapke, if you want to proceed with your testimony. And I believe, let me see, get my, we have amendment here? And I'll move the Bill 633, and we have an amendment, DE1 amendment, and do you want that put on the bill before we start out?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand custom and usage and the protocol is to avail the author of the bill to provide the opportunity for an author's amendment to be put on prior to explanation of the bill. But I think this is a piece of legislation that has been bantied about for a number of years. Representative Tabke and I represent this area, and with your discretion, I'm just wondering if prior to adding it on, just for the comfort of the people around the table, if he would be willing to explain, along with his testifiers, explain the contents of the DE. I'm certainly in support of the bill, but I think it's incumbent upon us to understand the ramifications of the words in the DE. So with that, and Representative Tapke and I had a conversation face-to-face just moments ago. Unfortunately, because our server for the House was not running last night when he and I tried to communicate. So for the sake of brevity, and I know we're running out of time, but I'm hoping that he would just give a brief explanation of the DE.
And Mr. Chair, or Representative Albright, I think I'll ask Ms. Roberts to explain the difference between the language of the two and what the amendment does.
Mr. Chair, members, House File 633, as introduced, includes provisions for providing for the ongoing operations of the Racing Commission in case a budget is not enacted. And as you are well aware of the history of this bill, in the 2011 session, the state government bill was not enacted, and during the shutdown, the racetrack was not able to operate. What the DE amendment does is it replaces some of those provisions that are specific to a shutdown situation with an ongoing statutory appropriation. And what that means is the dedicated receipts that are from the racetrack license fees, and those license fees are set in statute, currently go to a special revenue account, so they're dedicated, but they rely on a biennial appropriation from the legislature. This would replace that provision with a statutory appropriation, which means it would not have to be renewed every biennium.
Representative Albright. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. If I could just ask Ms. Roberts one clarifying question. Ms. Roberts.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Roberts, as you would look at the DE, and as you would compare lines 1.6 and 1.7 to what would appear to me some conflicting language on lines 1.23 and 1.24. My question to you is, would there be ongoing statutorily appropriated oversight by this committee pursuant to the adoption of this DE?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, I point to two things. First, the DE amendment includes an annual report to the legislature on lines 1.4 to 1.8 about the specifically on the use of the amounts that are statutorily appropriated. And I would also note that the Racing Commission would still be at any request of the legislature could appear before the legislature as part of the budget process, and I would assume would still produce budget documents. So that's my
thank you, Ms. Roberts.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just wanted to make those observations known as we enter into consideration of the DE. Thank you.
Representative Tapke, if you proceed to explain your we'll adopt the amendment. All in favor of the DE amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Proceed with your testimony and have your testifiers introduce themselves when they speak, and We proceed.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate everyone's time here, and I do apologize, Representative Albright, for sending you an email last night and not realizing it wasn't going through. So I apologize for that. You'll probably get it sometime tomorrow, maybe. Who knows? So today we are talking about a bill that is really important in my community with Canterbury Park and the Minnesota Racing Commission. As everyone may know, back in 2011, there was a shutdown that was devastating to the operations of the Minnesota Racing Commission and Canterbury Park and our community. It was Canterbury and other entities that are under the purview of the Minnesota Racing Commission at about $400 million annually in economic impact to the state of Minnesota from direct racing, but also everything that goes along with racing, with the horsemen and the veterinarians and feed supply, and it's a really big, fantastic industry for our community and the state, as well as having over 5,500 employees within the industry. And when the state government shuts down, the way everything is appropriated today, all operations cease within the Minnesota Racing Commission, even though this is a special revenue fund that is completely and wholly contained. It is funded 100% through fees and operations of the wagering industry. So there's nothing from the general fund that goes to fund the Minnesota Racing Commission. What this will do, after the DE amendment that we just passed, what this will do is switch, as Ms. Roberts explained, was switch the Minnesota Racing Commission from a direct appropriation to a statutory appropriation. What that means is that as if a shutdown were to occur and there was a hiccup in the budgeting process, which we know will never work, will never happen again in the state of Minnesota, which is what we're assuming. And we'll go forward with that, and we hope that that's the way it will work. But if it were to happen again, then what this will do is allow the Minnesota Racing Commission to use their current funds that they've got, as opposed to having those funds be completely shut off. I have two testifiers here, which will be extremely quick, Mr. Chair, talk about this bill and why it's important, and to help everyone understand what is happening. So, Mr. Chair, we've got court.
Proceed with your testimony, please. Identify yourself for the tape.
Court Holton with the Minnesota.
Pull the microphone over so we can.
Sorry.
That's okay.
After all the times I've been here, Court Holton with the Minnesota HBPA, which is the association made up of racehorse owners and trainers. And I will shorten what I was going to say, because there's a lot of things that you can talk about with this whole issue. The one I'll emphasize now is every year this fellow next to me has to recruit what you call stables to come to Minnesota to race during the racing season. This isn't a lightly made or last-minute decision. This is part of a long-term planning process by the trainers and the owners. They're probably planning 2021 right now. What kind of horses do we have now? What racetracks do we need to go to? When are they open? It's not easy to move a stable to a racetrack, and once you're in, there's often rules that prevent you from just getting up and going. And if you could get up and go, there's probably not a place to go to. So if you're at a racetrack, you have got to be racing those horses. They've been trained, they're at their peak, they're ready to go, and you're losing money hand over fist for your owners if you're not racing. So the instability that we've shown here over the past many years has cost us many stables already. And the last fact I'll make is that unlike we were talking about the sports, the amateur sports, I mean, a little earlier, and you're talking about oversight, and mostly the concern was maintenance, repairs, new buildings, capital investments, things like that. We don't have that under this situation, because all of the property is owned privately, and if those owners want to do capital improvements or fix things or repair things, it's their own money. Comes out of their own budget. That's not even part of the money that goes into the state and comes back for regulatory purposes. All of that money, of course, comes from my people in terms of the fees that they pay, and what they're supposed to get out of it is regulation. And we do not go around the Capitol seeking dollars, because we provide our own dollars. The part that people end up in a shutout, in a shutdown because of Article 11 of the state constitution, is for people who need other people's or state dollars. And if it's not appropriated, that's when you have a shutdown. Shutdown that we had in 2011 was extremely harmful to the industry, unnecessary. We have our own money. I'll stop rambling. Go ahead.
Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, Andrew Hoffman, Senior Director of Racing for Canterbury Park. And in interest of time, I'll just be here to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Questions from the members? Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been a while since I've been there, but I do remember asking when I was on the grounds how much it cost to rent a stall. And I recall it being a very significant number. Do you have any idea how much that is today?
I think there's someone from the commission with Mr. Hoffman if you want to take a stab at this.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Representative, there is no stall rent charged by Canterbury Park to house a horse at Canterbury. However, the cost of raising a horse and bringing a horse to Canterbury Park can be rather expensive. Most of our horses race in seasonal climates, warm weather places throughout the course of the winter, all along, you know, California, Florida, Arizona, and the cost of getting a horse to race in Minnesota can be upwards of $1,500 to $2,000 just to get it here. If you're speaking about a horse that would be bred in the state of Minnesota, to breed a horse within the state and bring it to the races, could be anywhere from $20,000 to $50,000, depending on what type of horse you're trying to breed.
Representative Mason.
Mr. Chair, I do recall that there were horses that were being housed at Canterbury. Some of them, however, were not racing at Canterbury because at that point in time, the purses were not large enough for some of the best horses. And I guess that's a figure I was looking at, what it really cost to keep a horse there.
Mr. Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it differs obviously by who's training each horse, but an average rate would be somewhere between $65 and $85 per day to care for each horse that's in training at Canterbury. We house up to 1,500 horses, so you can kind of do the math from there as to what the total economic impact would be on a per-day basis.
Okay. Representative Thank Mason. You. Any other members? Representative Volker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am in favor of this because I do understand the issue that exists. With the amendment that we adopted, I do have some concerns relative to now not being appropriated, how the amount of revenue will be controlled. And the reason I ask that is because it refers to there as taxes received. I would assume us as a legislature, if there's going to be a tax imposed, we would have some control over that. But it also talks about license fees, fines, and so forth. And when we move this into a special revenue fund with no appropriation, the control leaves the legislature. How is it going to be controlled so that those fees, fines, whatever, don't become excessive? Because sometimes a bureaucracy can start to feed on itself. And I have a concern that now that we're taken out of the loop here as far as oversight, because, yes, there is a report, but there doesn't seem to be much in the way of accountability to the report. How is that accountability going to exist?
Representative Tapke.
Mr. Chair, we have a member of the Minnesota Racing Commission here who I think would be best positioned to answer that question.
And Representative Vogel, I think by the report being there, we'll be seeing this every year, and if we deem that something inappropriate is going on, we could, by legislation, take this from being a statutory to going back to the way it is now as a legislature. But welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair, Tom DePasquale, Executive Director of the Minnesota Racing Commission. Representative, thanks for the question.
You'll recall we were here a couple of weeks ago and described our budget to you, shared our annual report from last year. We accrue about $800,000 a year in license fees from over 5,000 participants in racing and the tracks. Those fees are paid up front, and the amount of those fees are subject to legislative approval. Our enabling statute says that any increase in fees has to be approved by the legislature, and our fee structure has to reflect our cost structures. We can't overcharge for fees to gain more than our cost structure, operating costs, and we should not undercharge for fees. So whenever we have fee increases or any change in the fee structure, we're required to come back to you for approval. So that's your check to make sure the fees reflect our true costs.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's always this latent bit of accountant in me that has to ask questions.
I understand, Representative, and I've described myself in the past as a cheap Swede, and I like to know where the money's going also. Members, any further questions? If not, I will delay 633 over for as amended for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I encourage everyone this summer, once it finally gets warm, to come down and visit us at Canterbury. It's a very, very good time, so thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. And members, I think that's it before the committee. I just want to make note, an email was sent out next Tuesday morning. We will not be having a meeting. We're going to be giving our time up to the Elections Committee so they can get some of their work done before their first deadline. And with that, members, we're adjourned.